Are you happy? Now, I don't mean, is life easy? That's a different question. Life has all sorts of challenges and difficulties to it. The question when life is more demanding is, are we going to be defeated by that, defined by it, or developed by it? So I don't mean, is life easy? I mean, are you happy? It turns out there's a world database of happiness. It's actually a fairly serious and substantial organisation. It's funded by various commercial and government interests. It produces data which influences all sorts of decision-making policies at an international and global level. It turns out the UK is 15th in terms of average happiness out of around 155 different nations and countries which they've surveyed. It turns out the happiest place in the world is Costa Rica, with Denmark and Iceland taking silver and bronze position. What interests me is there's a correlation across the world in all countries that your happiness increases as you get older, kind of mid to late midlife. In the UK, the happiest age to be, it peaks at 65 years old. Well, that's certainly what the World Database of Happiness would suggest. So if you're less than 65, the good times are still to come. And if you're past 65, then I'm afraid it's all downhill from here on in. One of the stats that they'd created, they'd surveyed and discovered, I didn't quite resonate with me. There's actually an optimum temperature for happiness, which is 13.9 degrees centigrade, which, I'll be honest, sounds a bit chilly to me. But what really struck me about this World Database of Happiness is their measure, or in essence, their definition of happiness. It's the intensity of a sense of meaning, purpose, legacy, and contentment. So I ask again, are you happy? The intensity of a sense of meaning, purpose, legacy, and contentment. In the UK, the main question that they asked to determine this was, taking all things together, how satisfied or dissatisfied are you with your life as a whole these days? I assume they ranked it out of 10 because the scores are given in that kind of region. I wonder, take a moment and think about that. How satisfied or dissatisfied are you with your life? 10 being, I guess, entirely satisfied, and 0 being not satisfied at all. What rating would you give yourself? Are you happy? The average in the UK was 7.2, which, as I say, put us 15th, very high ranking, out of 155. The lowest nation, 2.6. The highest nation, Costa Rica, 8.5. Are you happy? The Huffington Post, which is pretty much the largest global online newspaper, founded in around 2006 or 2007 by a lady whose surname is in fact Huffington. It now has UK, US and various US states distinct websites. The Huffington Post, back on the 16th of this month, 16th of September 2013, had an article, The Happiness Habits of Exuberant People. There are in fact 21 of these habits. Some of them seem pretty obvious to me, right? They made sense. For example, happy people are resilient, able to bounce back from some of life's hardships. I guess they are the kind of people who don't let difficulty defeat or define them, but actually allow it to develop them. They're resilient to things. Secondly, they devote some of their time to giving and some of their money to giving. Exuberantly happy people give of their time and their money. They make time to pursue deep and meaningful conversations over and above the trivial or the trite or the small talk. They get spiritual, in the language of the Huffington Post. They all make a lot of sense to me when it comes to happiness. Ones that weren't quite as clear to me, they sleep more than 8 hours a day on average, 8 hours a night on average. I can only assume they don't have young children, these exuberantly happy people. It says having children lowers your happiness level. I'm not sure about that. But that your happiness increases when they grow up and leave home. Again, I'm not sure. Empty nesters sometimes say that's a very difficult time, not a happy time at all. The one that I really found strange and have actually put into practice this week to see if it works was that they have a bouncy walk. a spring in their step, I guess. So I've spent this last week walking around town, bouncing as I've walked. And I would say it's actually increased my happiness slightly, not least because catching someone's eye as you walk past them, kind of bouncing along, the knees bending and exchanging a smirk has created some quite pleasant moments with people. But in this article, The Huffington Post, more seriously, Martin Seligman, and I'm not entirely sure I'm pronouncing his surname correctly, but Martin Seligman, who is described as the father of positive psychology, or the popular sister of that is positive thinking. He's the academic behind that. It quotes him as describing three different kinds of happiness, three different kinds of lives, with an escalating level of happiness attached. First of all, the lowest level, the pleasant life, in which you fill your life with as many pleasures as you can. You meet your wants. It sounds like a forever lasting holiday on a Greek island in the sun and the sand. Doesn't actually sound that happy to me, because today's pleasure, if repeated endlessly, becomes tomorrow's torture, doesn't it? To some extent, it sounds slightly boring. This next level up, happier still, is the engaged life, where you find life in your work or parenting or love or leisure. I guess it means you sell out, you wholeheartedly give to something and fully engaged with it. That's the kind of middle level of happiness. And then the peak, the highest level of happiness, according to Martin Seligman, is the meaningful life, which, quote, consists of knowing what your highest strengths are and using them to belong to and in the service of something larger than yourself. Now, isn't that interesting? As far as I understand, Martin Selwig himself has no faith, and certainly he's not writing or studying from any kind of faith basis. He's a secular psychiatrist. And he's saying here the highest level of happiness, the meaningful life, and in itself that's an interesting phrase, the title that he's given to this highest level of happiness, the meaningful life, consists of knowing what your highest strengths are and using them to belong to and in the service, underline that, in the service of something larger than yourself. So I ask you again, are you happy? Not that temporary feeling of pleasure, but the intense sense of meaning, purpose, legacy, contentment, the meaningful life in Seligman's trio. Now, the Bible's word for this idea of happiness, this deep satisfaction, contentment, legacy, meaning and purpose, the Bible's word is blessed. The New Bible Dictionary defines blessed as a bestowal of good, meaning, purpose and contentment, usually associated with a sense of legacy. It's very much this idea of happiness as we've seen it defined in these various ways, to be blessed. Well, in John 13, sentence 17, which is the final sentence of the short paragraph we're going to look at in our study through John's account of Jesus' life, in John 13, 17, Jesus says, he uses that word blessed, and he says this, "Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." So here we have Jesus, the greatest teacher ever to have lived, Jesus who is still known and renowned as having the most substantial impact on all of culture and society that has ever been made by anyone. The calendar reset to mark his birthday, all of history divided and defined by his entry into the world. Here we have Jesus saying there is a route, a way to be happy, to be blessed. There is a way to have this bestowal of good and contentment and meaning and purpose, this sense of legacy. There is a way to be blessed. If you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. So there's things to know and then to do, to act upon, and through knowing and doing, we will be blessed. And Jesus' happiness survey, if you like, only has two questions. Have you been served by Jesus? And are you serving like Jesus? That's what he's just said. That's the things that he's just said that if we know and do, we'll be blessed. Let me show them to you here in the text. First of all, have you been served by Jesus? I'm going to read from sentence 13. Jesus says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet. Do you see the contrast there? Jesus is describing what's just occurred in the first half of chapter 13, the washing of the disciples' feet, quite a famous image we have of Jesus. And yet he says, I, your teacher and Lord. Now they're high titles. Teacher, rabbi, was a central figure in Jewish culture, highly respected. Lord doesn't simply mean master or leader, it has divine connotations, it means God himself. And it's alluded to in a third way when he says there in sentence 13, for that is what I am, and whenever we read that phrase, I am, on the lips of Jesus, he's quoting, he's alluding to Exodus chapter 3, thousands of years earlier, when God himself revealed his identity by saying, I am who I am. So Jesus here is using the phrase ego emanias in the original, which means, look, I'm taking the name of God here. So three times, teacher, Lord, and then with the usage of I am more implicitly, Jesus is showing his incredibly high status. You can't get higher than Jesus. And then he goes on to say, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet. Well, the washing of feet was the lowliest of tasks in culture at the time. Jerusalem was a big capital city. There's a big festival occurring with millions of extra people, some estimate 4 to 5 million extra people descending upon Jerusalem, and yet this is pre-sanitation, pre-sewage works. The streets would have literally run with excrement, waste, rubbish, junk, rotting food, carcasses, who knows what. There's no rubbish pickup, there's no bin men coming clanking at 6 a.m. in the morning, there's no piping and tubes and tunnels under the surface carrying away water and wastage, there's no flush toilets, it's all out there in the open. And you're walking around in the heat, so it's turning rancid, you're walking around in open sandals. And so yes, you've had your morning shower, you've shaved, you've brushed your hair, but even the shortest walk through the streets and your feet are caked in filth and junk and excrement. You walk into someone's house, and the lowliest slave, in fact a Jewish slave wasn't allowed to do it in Jewish culture, it had to be a Greek or a Gentile slave, it's the lowliest of tasks. They'd literally crawl around amongst the feet of the people coming into the home, pouring jugs of water, one jug to the other, with the feet in between. So a cascade, a waterfall of water, cleans your feet before you enter the house. And Jesus, the one who is teacher, Lord, the great I am here, says, I've washed your feet. I've chosen to surrender my status, surrender my power, surrender my position to serve you. And we know this is an allusion to the cross. This is a physical demonstration Jesus is making the night before he dies to his death. Because in some of the phrasing he uses to describe it, such as back in verse 4 when it says he took off his outer clothing, is phrasing that he's used to describe his own death. So took off in chapter 13 verse 4 is the same as laid aside or laid down my life. He uses in chapter 10 verse 15 and 18 the same kind of language and wordage. Back in chapter 13 verse 1 when it introduces this free theme, John said things like Jesus knew that his hour had come to leave this world, implicit reference to his death. Or he loved them to the end. That phrase to the end means to completion, to death. So Jesus is saying this is a lived out, a demonstrated metaphor for his own death. He's going to die the next day. This is his last day on earth. He knows it's coming. And he says, look, I'll need you to know that I have served you in this way. I've surrendered my great high status as teacher, Lord, and I am to become the lowliest slave. And I want to wash you clean, not of the grime, filth and excrement of the road, but of the grime and filth of your sin and shame and guilt. And my death will do that as I leave my high place, wash you spiritually clean by my death. So have you been served by Jesus? Do you know him as Saviour and trust him as such? That's the know and do of being blessed here. To know him as Saviour, the cleansing Saviour. And what are we to do with that? To trust him. To allow him to wash our feet. To not try and scrub them clean ourselves, which won't work. But to trust him as that cleansing Saviour. So have you been served by Jesus? Are you happy? Have you been blessed? You need to be served by Jesus. But secondly, having been served by Jesus, are you serving like Jesus? Not just a saviour to trust, but now a servant to imitate. That's the know and do, to be blessed, to know him as servant and do what? To imitate him. Having been served by him, to serve like him. Let me read again from sentence 14. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than one who sent him. You see, three times Jesus says the same thing. He says, just as I have served you, you now need to serve others. I've given, you should wash one another's feet, verse 14. I've given you an example, verse 15. No servant is greater than his master, verse 16. Three times. Having been served by Jesus, you now need to serve like Jesus. The way to happiness, to be blessed, is to serve others. To know Jesus as servant and to imitate him. And of course this is radically countercultural, isn't it? Of course this goes against the grain of people who say, well, you need to serve yourself, you need to look after yourself, you serve the people who are closest to you, you serve only to a point where it's not to your discomfort or particular pain. This is radically different, radically countercultural, and against the human heart and our own default. And yet, I'd say to you, well, how is it working for you to follow culture? Do we have a society full of people who are happy, content, purposeful, their life has meaning, there's a deep legacy and they are deeply satisfied? Well, of course we don't. Quite the opposite. We have a culture desperately scrabbling to try and find some sort of identity, some level of meaning and satisfaction. Whole generations with no purpose or direction. So it's clearly not working. And then here we have Jesus, who history for 2,000 years, endless generations across all cultures, Jesus who has been found to say what is true and right and better, saying, look, there is a way to be happy, a way to be blessed. First, you need to be served by me. I need to wash your feet so you're spiritually clean. Trust me as your saviour. But secondly, now you need to serve others like I have served you. Become like me in my death is some of the New Testament language. Have this mind amongst you, the same mind as Christ, Philippians 2, Paul says, who though he was the teacher, the rabbi, the Lord, the great I am, came and washed your feet, came to be a servant. Mark 10:45, Jesus himself says it. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. So be like Jesus. Serve like Jesus, because Jesus wants us to be happy, and he shows us how to be happy. He says, now that you know these things, you will be blessed, you will be happy if you do them. Have you been served by Jesus? Are you serving like Jesus? Are you happy?